WTD News. I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg up next. Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg, and we have what promises to be a busy and exciting morning show today, kicking off with Jim Wardrop, one of the most exciting people I know, talking about an event which is going to be coming up this Sunday, Historic Places Tour presented by Preservation Racine. We look forward a little later in the hour to welcoming into our studios the new executive director of the Racine Literacy Council, celebrating their 50th anniversary this year. And I'm not certain, but I'm hoping by the end of the hour, we're also going to be having a little conversation about the latest Big Read project through the Kenosha Public Library, which is of Harper Lee's great classic, To Kill a Mockingbird. So, and if we end up not talking about that today, we'll talk about it another day. But we may actually have all three of these wonderful conversations coming your way today on the morning show. First, Jim Wardrop, who is a vice president for Preservation Racine and heading up publicity for the 2015 Historic Places Tour. Jim Wardrop, we welcome you to the morning show.
Good morning, good morning, and thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Good to have you here. Preservation Racine is such an important organization. How long have you been part of it?
Actually, I'm a rookie. I've been a part of it for about 3 years, officially on the board and on the board of directors and that type of thing. But we've participated. I got involved with it when someone came up and said, we'd like to honor your home. And this was the Century Homes, which is the other main event we have for Preservation Racine. And we have a home that was built in the 1850s.
Hmm.
And the word custom comes up a lot.
Right? I'm sure, yeah.
And it's very cold in the winter.
Right.
But other than that, so we started to learn about the wonderful homes and historic districts that we have in Racine. Kenosha has a slew of wonderful homes as well. And the Racine area right now is being a stopping point for architecture now, with the Frank Lloyd Wright buildings and the campus being open more to the public, as well as our walkable tours for the Racine Historic District.
Mm. So, in a nutshell, what would you say is the primary purpose of Preservation Racine? I mean, as the name suggests, are you about trying to preserve some of these beautiful old structures? And if it is about preserving them, how do you go about doing that?
Well, I think basically it's to encourage preservation of the buildings and actively encourage. A lot of times we aren't in a position to, you know, save a building purchase a building. We kind of work as a glue, if you will, to work with other groups if something is going to be torn down or whatever, there's hopefully an alternative or whatever. So basically, it's that, and also making people aware of the Racine area, the historic districts that we have, and the cultural value, because every home is there's a story with every home or neighborhood, and anywhere in the country. So I guess we aren't unique, but we're a group that in the 70s we did save a home from demolition, which is called the Blake House. It's an Italianate, one of the finest examples in the state, according to the Historical Society. And we utilize that as an office, and we have apartments in there where we generate some revenue from that. It's kind of like we have plans down the road for that.
Very good. Yeah. So if something is old, is it worth preserving, or is there more to it than that?
Golly. not necessarily. I'm old, and I don't know whether I'm worth preserving. But I think there's, there are some guidelines that you take a look at, and the architectural significance. A big thing is also the condition of the home. You might have a beautiful, beautiful old home, but it will cost zillions to get it rehabbed and done. And then what are you going to do with it? And that type of thing. So we aren't so much in the business of home ownership and that type of thing. But again, the whole key to this tour, this historic places, shows the significance of homes historically and architecturally to the community of Racine. And this year is called Life Along the Lake. So these homes are, and buildings are going to be featured north of the Racine Harbor and up to Wind Point.
And some beautiful locations. And I was just noticing and being reminded, one of the reasons we're doing this interview today is because this is the 40th annual tour of historic places. Yes. And so that's exciting. I know that in terms of looking at your brochure, leading the way is the Wind Point Lighthouse, not the lighthouse itself. That will not be open on this tour, but the lovely little keeper's residence is going to be open, and that's worth seeing.
Yeah, well, it is, because everybody has been, sees the lighthouse, and they go on the grounds. And I might add on that, on Sunday, when you go out to the lighthouse keeper's home, which is just really, really a neat thing, and you're going to be able to see what's going on. It was built in the 1880s. And the Foghorn Museum, which is on the grounds, will also be open, and they have a marvelous, marvelous gardens. It's not huge, but it's a beautiful garden. And the day is supposed to be great, so it'll be a beautiful view out on the lake. And each one of these homes that we have, or buildings that we have, we have docents in each room, actually, or in stations throughout the buildings. And they've done all this research on these homes. And so you get to hear a story and the history of each of these homes. Some of those, such as Alfred B. Lynch, was the a Civil War vet, was the first person to have the house, and he was the lighthouse keeper. And The you'll hear a story. Well, I'm going to let it out of the bag here, aren't I? Is that when they got the lighthouse, the light on the lighthouse fixed or built, they turned it on, and there was a revolving of the light going around for the lighthouse. And that worked only for one day. And so for the next 15 to 20 days, the lighthouse keeper had to go up and manually have people turn this around.
Good exercise.
Now, they got the day off, but not in the evening.
Wow.
So, you know, there are other things. And then also out at the lighthouse location will be a display in the building on our boat building history in Racine. We, the Racine Boat Company, for one, but there was a lot of history that went on between Pierce Company, for instance, was making motors for automobiles, and then they started making them for boats and so on and so forth. In fact, I think there are three or four launches that are still out in Lake Geneva that were made by the Racine Boat Company back in the early 1900s.
So. Wow. What's interesting, too, is that although a lot of residences are on this tour, there's also the village of North Bay Village Hall, and the architect for this lovely little building, probably the biggest reason why this is on the tour.
Well, absolutely, and of course, what's a Racine show of buildings and things without some intertwining in the Frank Lloyd Wright? And James Dresser is the architect, and he was a Taliesin fellow, and he was commissioned to do the North Bay Village Hall. And he was chosen because he also designed the library at Lake Geneva.
Mm.
And which is a magnificent building.
It
and
is.
So when you go by and you look at this out in North Bay, you're going to see it looks like nothing you can imagine. It's very organic architecture, and it's just a lovely, lovely structure.
We want to remind people of a couple other public spaces or relatively public spaces, like the Racine Yacht Club, which will be open, the Racine Water Utilities, which is such a striking structure right there on the lake, in addition to these homes. One of the things that struck me as I looked at these homes, and it's an array of homes, including several that have to be called mansions,
yes,
and then a couple of others that are more like relatively modest but beautiful homes, that some of them date back into the 19th century. But one of these so-called historic homes was designed and built in 1966. And I think that's a good reminder that when we talk about preservation, Racine, and historic buildings, that it isn't always the things that take us back to the time of Rutherford B. Hayes, but sometimes it is even structures that are relatively recent, but that have historic interest for one reason or another.
Well, in several cases, you mentioned about the Racine Yacht Club. The Yacht Club is celebrating its 100th year, and that's on a beautiful location. The 1966 home is an interesting one. It's designed very contemporary, but it's designed by Hans Geyer, who is a regional architect or farther out.
Yeah.
But southeastern Wisconsin, he did an awful lot of homes.
And I think it's good to remind people of that because, I mean, there's always something interesting to go through really old homes like your home.
Sure.
But it's also really fun to step back into something that is more like 50 years old.
Yes.
And particularly something that is as striking as this particular home is. And by and large, how did you secure the cooperation of these various homeowners to allow people into their homes? And is that something that most homeowners sort of eagerly agree to, or is there a little bit of cajoling involved in gaining this kind of access?
Well, I think it's depends on the owner, I guess, obviously. But for 40 years we've been doing this, and the first step is to identify a home that that has significance, historical or architectural significance. And also look at a building. that has that. And then approaching the people and say, would you be interested in? And it's, I think, kind of with anything. You have some people that are reluctant to open their home to, you know, 1,000 people or that type of thing.
Right.
But I think for the most part, we continue to have people willing to show their home, and with the house captain, we have a house captain, and then we have docents that are in each room, and so on and so forth. But I think it's, we can't thank the homeowners enough and the owners of the buildings, because without their help,
this wouldn't happen.
Wouldn't happen.
So explain to our listeners what people do if they want to attend the 40th annual historic tour on Sunday. Where do they secure tickets?
Gosh, I thought you'd never ask. First of all, what we've done this year is we've extended our reach. We've been, for 38, 39 years mostly, we've kind of stayed in Racine and told people about it and so on and so forth. And we've kind of extended out. So what we do have, we have, first of all, you can buy tickets until Friday store closing hours. And those are advance tickets, and those are $15 a piece, cash only or check. Or you can go online at preservationracine.org to order your tickets. Or you can buy the tickets on tour day at several locations, and those locations are at the Wind Point Lighthouse, the North Bay Village Hall, which is the Dressler building, the North Beach Park, or the Racine Water Utilities Plant, which is also on North Beach. But and locations, store locations, we've got wonderful Andrea's has been very supportive, and so in the Kenosha area, Andrea's. In the Burlington area, Gooseberry's Fresh Market is a first for us. We've gotten a partnership with those folks. And then we also have Real Racine. If you're out on Highway 20 in the interstate, the Tourism Bureau out there is available. And then we have First Weber and Racine, Larson's Bakery, Milliger's, Miller's Flowers, O&H Bakeries, the Heritage Museum, Brzezinski's Farm Market, and Uncorked. So we've got a lot of places, and you can find all of them on the website.
Very good. And the Packers are not playing on Sunday. You managed to arrange that, so
we
I'm
did.
Impressed.
I talked with the folks up there, and they said, this is a great event.
This is far more important than football.
This is far more important. So the Packers aren't playing on Sunday, which is a good thing. There's no excuses, but they do play on Monday.
So. Very good. Well, in the meantime, we hope a lot of people will take this opportunity to celebrate this anniversary of the 40th annual Historic Places Tour for Preservation Racine, happening this Sunday, the 27th of September. Jim Wardrop, thank you for joining us for this portion of the morning show, and we hope a lot of people will turn out for what is always a lovely, lovely event. And part two of today's morning show, celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Racine Literacy Council, is coming up in just a moment here on WGTD. Stay with us. And now for part two of today's morning show here on WGTD, the Racine Literacy Council, which has played a very significant role on the morning show over the years, is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. And with that 50th anniversary also, a new person in charge with the retirement of Kay Gregor, who led the Racine Literacy Council with such distinction for so many years. But now a new executive director of the Racine Literacy Council is in place, and we are meeting him today, Steve Musenden. And also with us in the studios is the president of the board for the Racine Literacy Council, Donald Kress, whom I'm sure many of you know. And welcome to both of you. But Professor Kress, I want to start with you. I wonder if you could just say a word about, first of all, the challenge of filling the shoes of somebody as, like Kay Gregor, and the tremendous legacy of that she created at the Racine Literacy Council, and what sort of search was underway then to find her successor.
Well, Kay was a magnificent director. She was a wonderful advocate for literacy. She was able to take care of the big things and the little things that had to be done in overseeing a literacy council. And one of the things that makes the Racine Literacy Council unusual is that, unlike every other literacy council in Wisconsin, it has a building. And that's good news and bad news. But she was very, very good at keeping track of things related to the building, relating to the employees, relating to the volunteers, relating to the students and clients, and a very, very attentive person, a very caring person, and just an extraordinary advocate for literacy. Now, the search was gone about in a very, very careful, deliberate way. We wanted to make sure, what did we want the Literacy Council to be, and what kinds of qualities and skills the new person would need to have in order to match well with the hopes that we had for the Literacy Council. And we were extremely, extremely fortunate that Stephen chose to be an applicant and to accept our offer when it came. He has a good deal of experience of the sort that we were looking for, and he has a very, very strong background in private sector work, which I think gives a great deal of credibility when talking with some of the companies, organizations that we want to partner with and ask for support from. So it's been a wonderful thing, and we're very, very grateful that Stephen has chosen to join, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience. Nobody likes transition or change, but I think this has gone as well as ever could be expected. It was just very, very well done.
Very good. Well, Steve Musenden, for the first time, but by no means the last time, I'm happy to welcome you to the morning show. How long have you been on the job?
Roughly about 2.5 months. And thanks, Greg, for having me this morning. About 2.5 months now, since the middle of beginning of June.
So are you still in the shell-shocked stage of sort of not knowing which end is up, or are you past that? You seem to be.
I think there are no more blind sides that they can hit me with right now, so I think I'm pretty stable. I have a wonderful staff that's been working with me, and the community has accepted me with open arms.
Great. Where are you from originally?
The short story is Kenosha. The long story is by way of New York.
Oh, that does sound like a complicated story. And do you have anything in your background that would point to this kind of work specifically in the field of literacy?
Well, I work with a lot of nonprofits. I've worked for nonprofits over the last 15 years. More recently, I am the president of the Wisconsin Black Chamber of Commerce.
Ah.
So I've had dealing with the education component as it directly relates to entrepreneurship and business owners and making them successful.
Right. So do you take this job with any sense of trepidation in terms of kind of the scope of the problem that the Literacy Council is trying to address, and the challenges that are involved in trying to do this kind of work?
First and foremost, I don't have any problems. I just call them situations.
Ah.
And secondly, I like what I do. So right now, I'm just getting my feelers out, making sure I understand what's going on in the community and how best the Racine Literacy Council can affect that, also with the collaboration of other organizations.
Hmm. That can make a difference, can it? When you're not doing this important work in isolation, but in partnership with other groups with very, very similar goals. We're talking about a small army of volunteers that really carry out the heart and soul of what the Racine Literacy Council is all about. Just how many volunteers are we talking about what happens?
Over the 50 years of our existence, we've had 1,300 volunteers who have provided literacy assistance for over 10,000 clients and students.
Wow.
So it's fairly large. If you go on any given day, you'll see a lot of people coming and going, volunteers and students, and it's quite an impressive effort, I think.
Hmm. Remind us about the sort of the format by which this assistance is given to people, because it happens in a couple of different ways, right?
I mean, yes, it does. We have a couple of programs that are set up. We have what's called the STEPS program, which is the acronym for Student Tutor Entry Programs. They could be on a one-on-one basis or what we call a drop-in. Hmm. And then also we have a group setting, which is more, based on the academia of the individuals, where they are in the literacy phases. So right now we also have an English as a Second Language program or English Language Learner. We provide an opportunity to get their driver's license, CDL, and we also have a citizenship program. And one of the things that we're trying to move in the forefront is as you go through literacy and the components, there's also coming into the 21st century, computer literacy.
Mm.
That should be directly associated with that. And right now we have our students, we suggest that they sign up for these programs, but as we start to venture out into the community, we're also looking to get public, students as well. Right now it's limited students that we have, but we're going to make it a public offering at some point once we get ourselves situated.
Right. So in other words, and this is something that your predecessor, Kay Greger, certainly had a lot to do with, you have really expanded the notion of what that word literacy means, and it goes far beyond what's still, I would assume, the central mission of helping everybody to be able to read,
right.
But you really are looking at literacy in a more comprehensive fashion.
Scope. Yes, definitely. Like I said, with the computer literacy, financial literacy, and also health literacy is a major component right now. And we're having seminars coming up in the not-too-distant future, and I'll let you know about that and give you dates so you can promote that as well.
Right. It seems to me that in the conversations we've had about the Racine Literacy Council over the years, and for that matter, the Kenosha Literacy Council as well, probably the worst part of the conversations is when we talk about waiting lists. It seems like there's almost always a waiting list of people anxious to access your services, and there's just so many people with this need and just never quite enough people. Is that still the case?
Right now, we're decreasing our waiting lists. That's why I mentioned with the STEPS program and the group process. We have the one-on-one for those that need it, but if you have a group process, you get more people off the waiting list.
Mm.
And so when you go into the different phases of tutoring those individuals, it's in a group setting. The outcomes are greater in a group setting.
Huh.
So that enables you to move that waiting list and decrease the numbers. Right now, we're pretty close to almost June and July people that were on the waiting list. So we're catching up. We're
wow.
really catching up. We've had a lot of tutors come on board that we're training currently. And by the end of, I want to say, September, the beginning of October, we can put those students that were on that waiting list and we might be fully caught up. I just really have to look at the numbers.
And we're always looking at the training process itself for tutors to make sure that we are giving them what they need in a timely way and not more than they need, so that they can be as helpful to the students as possible. One statistic that Stephen had given me was that about 1 in 6 adults in Racine County has significant literacy needs. And the prospects for an individual, the prospects for a community are very, very much dependent on having a community that is literate and is able to take the jobs that are available now and are going to be available in future.
I think it's probably important for us to say a word to anybody listening who maybe is intrigued by the notion of being a volunteer or a tutor that appreciates your mission, but maybe wonders if they have what it takes. That it's probably important to say that it's not just retired college professors who are worthwhile and effective volunteers and tutors for this program.
Greg, funny you should mention that. We actually are having a tutor training coming up October 17th. It's going to go from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And we prefer that they register at least 1 week in advance if they're interested in becoming a tutor.
Mm-hmm. And so the call goes out for anybody who appreciates the important mission of the Racine Literacy Council to think seriously about this. And I remember something Kay liked to talk about quite a lot is that it's a very sort of versatile opportunity that is, depending on how much time you have to give and what your particular schedule happens to be, there's almost certainly a way in which you can be part of this.
Right. There are people who, because of their work schedule, they're limited. And there are others that we've looked at the list. There are some with tens of thousands of hours that they've logged working with students over the years.
Before we let you go, we need to talk about this matter of the 50th anniversary. That obviously only rolls around once in the history of an organization. So is some big party or celebration planned, or are you just going to keep on doing the hard work you've always done?
Well, we kicked off in February our campaign for literacy in Racine County, the 50th anniversary campaign. What we want to do is to pay off the mortgage and have a rainy day fund for repairs and needed upgrades. We would rather not have deferred maintenance looking at us. And we also, as Stephen mentioned about computer literacy, we need to have technology upgrades and generally have a rainy day fund available. And we have a campaign goal of $450,000. Sunday on October 4th, we have a gathering. It's at 4:30 is the social hour, and 5:30 is the dinner and program at the Racine Marriott, and that will be our big celebration for our 50 years. So we're really looking forward to that, and we hope that anybody who'd be interested in attending that event, please contact Racine Literacy Council.
And what is the address of your website after 3 months? Do you have that memorized yet?
Oh, most definitely. It's, of course, www.racineliteracy.com.
Well, I'm impressed. It takes me longer than that to get those kind of things committed to memory. Well, Steve Musenden, it's great to meet you for the first time, and good to know that someone so capable and caring is at the helm of this really important organization as it heads into its second century of reaching out to the community in all of these very important ways. And we look forward to having you back on the morning show to talk about the ongoing work of this organization.
Well, thank you very much, Greg.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Donald Kress, the president of the board of directors for the Racine Literacy Council. It's 8:45 and part 3 of today's morning show, a look at the Big Read in Kenosha, sponsored by the Kenosha Public Library, is coming up next. You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTDHD, your gateway to public radio. And now for part three of today's program, today's morning show here on WGTD. I'm happy to welcome into our studios Jill Miatek, who is with the Kenosha Public Library. Are you at a particular branch of the public library?
I'm actually stationed mostly at the Southwest Library, but because I plan adult programs for the library system, I do get to travel around a lot.
So
it's fun.
Very good. So you're down there on 80th Street in that beautiful, huge facility. And you are here for our closing portion of the program today to talk about The Big Read, which is a really great program. I'm sure many of our listeners are acquainted with it. For maybe the one or two that don't know what we're talking about, explain in general what Big Read is all about.
Sure. The Big Read is a program of the National Endowment for the Arts, and we apply for a grant. And this is Kenosha Public Library's fourth Big Read. And it's a program that's really designed to bring reading back to the center of cultural life in America. And it's a community-wide reading program that encourages the entire community to read a single title. And then everybody comes together for programs, book discussions, performances, all kinds of things related to that book and the themes in that book.
Right. So remind me what the last one was.
Last year, UW Parkside actually ran it it was Fahrenheit 451. Before that, it was the stories and poems of Edgar Allan Poe. And there were two others before that.
Right. So often it's the Kenosha Public Library, but not necessarily, or sometimes it's a partnership of various organizations.
Right. We had been doing it every other year, just because of the way the timing works out with when we're doing the programs in relation to when the grant has to be turned in.
Right.
So we were going for every other year, and Parkside had so much fun with the Poe Big Read that they said, we want to apply in the off year, and we'll see what happens from here on out.
Right? There you go.
I think other people are looking into it, too.
So. That's cool. Well, it's exciting, and anything, of course, that gets people excited about reading is certainly a terrific thing. So it's a most intriguing choice that you've made this year, in that the choice is Harper Lee's great classic, To Kill a Mockingbird. And, of course, the name Harper Lee has already been in the news because of this much-discussed related novel by her that just got published earlier this year. How much did that have to do with the choice of To Kill a Mockingbird as this Big Read project?
Well, it's funny because the planning process begins so much earlier. We started planning this last fall. And at the time, we had no idea that this other book was going to be released. We just got really lucky with that.
Wow.
So, you know, it's been on our short list for the last couple of Big Reads as a choice. You have to choose a title from the National Endowment for the Arts list.
Oh, so they have certain classic works that they...
Certain classics, exactly. And so it's been on our short list for a long time. And finally, its time had come. And it turns out to have very timely themes. And then we got this great extra publicity boost for the Ghost Out of Watchmen.
Right. Yeah. You shouldn't ask for anything more, could you? Right. I suppose To Kill a Mockingbird makes sense on so many levels, and one of them, besides its timeliness, is the way in which this is a book that people of a lot of different ages can embrace and appreciate and learn from.
Right. It's one of the reasons we chose it was because it's so accessible to not only a lot of different reading levels, but a lot of different backgrounds. And it's a lot of people had to read it in school. And so a lot of people have already read it. A lot of people are interested in it. It's amazing how many people come and say, it's my favorite book of all time. I absolutely adore the book. They just deeply, deeply love the book.
Right.
So it's been a great choice so far. People have been extremely enthusiastic about it.
So explain, because I think, again, somebody who doesn't understand exactly how this project works might not even understand, well, why do you even need any money then? Why are you applying for a grant? Of course, the funding ends up being really, really important because of what you do with it.
Yes, exactly. The first thing that we do with the Big Read is give away copies of the book. And so far this year, We originally ordered about 3,000 copies, and the public libraries have been out of copies for a couple of weeks. You know, they went in about a week, week and a half. Ours were gone. They're still available, I believe, at UW Parkside Library, possibly at Racine Public Library, may still have copies left. It's hard to keep track. But we do have some more copies ordered, and we're waiting for them to come in. It won't be as many as the first time around, so they'll go fast also. But you know, generally we give away in the neighborhood of 3,000 copies of the book. So that's what a lot of the grant money goes toward. Other costs involved are publicity, the printing of the brochures, which you can pick up at any public library location in Racine and Kenosha, and some of the venues cost money. Some of the speakers cost money. Our keynote speaker is a nationally known speaker named Brian Stevenson. He'll be speaking in Kenosha on Friday, October 2nd at Ruther Auditorium at 7 p.m. Doors will open at 6:15, and it's completely free. He's speaking in Racine on Saturday, October 3rd at 10 a.m. at the Golden Rondell. And you do need to call the Golden Rondell to reserve seats at 260-2154. Brian Stevenson, he's giving us a talk called American Injustice, Mercy, Humanity, and Making a Difference. He is the author of the book called Just Mercy, which was on the New York Times bestseller list.
Oh, yeah.
He's a professor of law at New York University and the founder of the Equal Justice Initiative, which is a Southern law practice dedicated to defending the very most marginalized people in our society. And that's his cause is really fighting injustices in the criminal justice system.
Wow.
So,
and boy, that speaks so much to the heart of one of the most important storylines in To Kill a Mockingbird.
Right, right. He's his TED Talk, he's an incredibly good speaker. His TED Talk was named one of the 5 essential TED Talks of all time by the New Yorker magazine. He's been named one of Time's 100 most influential people for 2015. So he's an incredibly compelling speaker. He's very, I saw him speak once before, and it was just incredible. He's a fantastic speaker. So I encourage everyone to try to get to that.
Wow, that's great. So in coming to Kenosha and to Racine, so
yes,
both communities have the opportunity to hear what he has to say. We have a couple of minutes if you want to highlight a couple of other events that are coming up as part of the Big Read.
Well, it's hard to pick any out because there's 70 programs this time around.
Wow.
All taking place between October 1st and November 6th. There's a lot of book discussions, and we have some very interesting ones. The Big Read standard book discussion that has been a feature of every Big Read is the Kenosha Literacy Council and the Women's Club of Kenosha joint book discussion. And there's usually an interesting presentation and food, and that's a lot of fun. There's theatrical performances by RG Productions and Lakeside Players. And there's musical performances. Tequila Mockingbird and open mic night at TG's in Kenosha. The Bonk performance series in Racine is tying their October Bonk into the social justice theme. And also we'll be announcing the Racine and Kenosha Poet Laureates at that one. That's October 24th at Riverbend Nature Center.
That's kind of cool, too, that although you're from the Kenosha Public Library, but you've highlighted several events that are also taking place in Racine.
Well, that's right. Last year during Fahrenheit 451, Parkside started this ball rolling where the Big Read was happening in both Kenosha and Racine jointly. And everyone was really enthusiastic about that. So we have made sure that that's happening again this year, and Racine has come forth with some great programs and
that's
getting
absolutely
the ball
terrific.
Rolling. As somebody, trying to break down that KR barrier.
Absolutely. As somebody who lives in one city and works in the other, I applaud anything that brings the two communities together. It's great to see that happening more and more. And this is so tremendously exciting. And I'm sure that you hope that a program like Big Read not only is a celebration of reading for people who are already readers, but that somehow it also sort of makes its way into the lives of people who have maybe forgotten the joys of reading, or maybe even for the first time in their lives need to realize the joys that come with taking in hand a tremendous classic like To Kill a Mockingbird.
Well, that certainly is one of the goals of the Big Read, and that's what we do try to keep that in mind and try to draw people in with a big variety of programs. Yeah. A big part of the Big Read is doing programs out in the community at community venues. We have a couple of events at bars. We have some events at museums and restaurants and some other places. So we try to really get out there and make it interesting for people who don't come to the library all the time or don't read a book all the time. It's a way to read and then also have some community to go discuss it with.
Absolutely. Tremendous idea. So the brochures are available at the public library, and then otherwise, is there a website people can visit to
there
see
is.
All this information?
You can find a link on practically any library in the area. I think Parkside, the public library in both Kenosha and Racine have links on their homepages for it. The Kenosha Public Library is www.mykpl.info. That's I-N-F-O. And the Big Read website is neabigread.org. And if you click on communities and put in the Kenosha zip code, any Kenosha zip code, 53140 works fine, then you can see an entire list of everything. There are a few things on the website that were added after the brochure was printed. So for the full list, see that neabigread.org website.
Very good. Jill Miatek is with the Kenosha Public Library with us today talking about the Big Read, and the Big Read focus this time around is Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird, one of the great masterworks really in the history of the printed page as far as I'm concerned. And so we hope a lot of people are going to access the many and varied events that are surrounding a Big Read, and it's a tremendous way not only to reacquaint yourself with this classic or to see it, read it for the first time, but also to just celebrate the importance of reading. So on the heels of our conversation about the Racine Literacy Council and its 50th anniversary, this is a very timely conversation indeed. Jill Miatek, I'm so glad that you joined us today on The Morning Show. Best wishes to you.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we're going to play some music from the film To Kill a Mockingbird to start the music potpourri in just a moment. Let me remind you, first of all, support for The Morning Show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for The Morning Show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient and evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Our forecast today for partly sunny skies with a high of 72 degrees, partly cloudy overnight with a low